Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, so this is a really fascinating fly-on-the-wall doco. It's an area where people don't hear a lot more other than the tragic news stories. So you tell us a little bit about where the idea to film this documentary about an Afghani metal band came from?
It was pretty much just osmosis. I was living in Afghanistan. I'd been there for 3 years. I unearthed this music scene that I frankly wasn't expecting to find when I came to Kabul. I went there as a journalist, but I was a musician from my younger years, and there was this expat scene where people were playing in bands, in sort of underground, sort of, you know, beatnik, bootleg kind of venues, kind of speakeasy kind of locations. And I got involved in that music scene, and all of a sudden, yeah, I was the center of that music scene. And from that discovery, some Afghan bands popped up along the sort of patchwork of this underground scene. And all of a sudden, I was mentoring a local Afghan metal band. It just wasn't something that was planned or something that I even conceived. It just sort of walked into my door one day. I was quite lucky to have a practice room in my studio where we would practice it with our own band. And the Afghans came along and said, "Hey, we want to make metal." I said, "Great. Here's a studio, here's some instruments, go in there and try and figure it out." And for the first 6 months, I just left them to try and discover who they were and what they were trying to do. And then after they kind of figured out their first couple of songs, we came in and started to mentor them.
So the band made up of 5 members. So tell us a little bit about District Unknown.
Look, they were 2 cousins and 2 brothers who were into metal. They didn't know each other. I met them through mutual friends and I said, "These 4 guys have to get together." They had no idea about what kind of genre they wanted to play besides the umbrella of metal. And so therefore they came in and they'd seen their heroes on YouTube, Metallica, Slayer, Opeth, Judas Priest, all these kind of bands. And they just wanted to do that, but they didn't know how to make it. So we kind of gave them the tools, the theory, the instruments, and most importantly, a place for practice so that they could actually do that normal sort of journey of discovery that most teenagers and young adults do when they first make a band. And look, they were quite a motley crew in a sense. In a country like Afghanistan, by their terms, it was motley, not by our terms here in Australia. But all they really wanted to do was make music, and we just gave them a space to do that.
At the opening of the you have a Taliban cleric who says it's actually permissible to kill anyone who plays heavy metal music now. Initially, the band performed only in expatriate areas. Is heavy metal still currently poorly received in Afghanistan?
I mean, look, all music which is non-religious is deemed by conservative elements in Afghanistan to be forbidden or haram. So that includes everything from Bollywood through to pop music, through to hip-hop, metal. And when you ask the Taliban, like we did in our film, what is rock music, what is hip-hop, and what is metal, they don't understand the difference. It's all just Western, and therefore it's forbidden. I think in those early years, even just the local society didn't really understand what was going on. They just knew that it was some Afghans cavorting with some foreigners and making some loud noise. But as the band began to get some prominence, both on the stage and in the sort of public arena to a certain extent, people got more inquisitive and wanted to know about metal. And the sort of obvious presumption in these countries is, well, they must be worshipping Satan because, you know, that's Satan's music. And that's a really destructive misconception that we tried to spell by inviting parents of the musicians and local Afghans to these concerts to show them, hey, they're just making music. There's nothing satanic about it. And actually, in true sense, they were actually singing about problems in their country to do with the conflict at hand. They were writing songs about civilian casualties and just the cost of war for a country which has been at war for a long time.
While many bands around, you know, Australia would complain about a lot of things, maybe public transport, roads, the lockout laws in Sydney, in comparison to Afghanistan, these are really first world problems. So in Afghanistan, you've got like bigger logistical and cultural challenges. You have the problem of power in the amplifiers if you've got like a consistent power source. And probably more menacing is just that lingering fear of a suicide bomber targeting any sort of large congregation of people.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the main messages that musicians take away from seeing this film. Obviously, we have non-musicians seeing these films as well, but most musicians come out going, "Wow, man, I got it easy in Australia." And that's really one of the main points of this film is that, you know, all Australians have it easier than Afghans in that sense. And I think they'll realise and appreciate that what they do have here in this country is that everything is at your beck and call if you want it. And it's very easy to get. You just have to wish for it and work hard. Whereas Afghanistan, there was constant challenges with security, with logistics. But when you have a passion for music like the boys in District Unknown had, then there's just no question. You have to carry on. Not to say that there weren't moments when they wanted to quit the band and they wanted to not do a concert. There was band meeting after band meeting. There was a joke that used to go around that District Unknown would have more band meetings than concerts. And I think that was actually true. But either way, they carried on and they were the pioneers of their genre of music in a country which had huge obstacles in front of it.
What's also, I mean, you obviously talked about this a little bit. The band's songs often tie into their experiences. So I think they had a song called 2 Seconds, which was about like a band member who narrowly escaped a suicide bombing. And you know, there are other Muslim countries. I mean, like in Indonesia, there's actually a really healthy metal and punk scene. Can you see Afghanistan embracing heavy metal?
Well, if you had asked me this question 4 months ago, I would have said no, because the scene finished. And that was the truth of the matter. The only thing that's really survived in Afghanistan post our withdrawal has been hip-hop. And the reason why hip-hop has survived is because the footprint is a lot smaller. You only need a laptop, a sound card, and a microphone, and you can make music. Whereas, obviously, metal, you have a massive footprint in regards to equipment and practice room and so forth. It's just louder. So 4 months ago, that was my answer. But I got contacted by this young kid from Afghanistan who found me through the World Wide Web and my film and reached out to me saying, hey, I want to start a metal band, but all I've got is me. Do you know anyone? And so I kind of did a bit of an email sort of message around town and sort of tried to figure out, you know, who he could team up with. And it seems like in the very early inklings that we might have our next generation of metal heads or metal musicians in Kabul, which is really exciting. It's early days, but we're hoping that this might actually prosper into something a little bit more fruitful in the future.
So the band originally performed its concerts within what's known as the expatriate area, but it was able to do some concerts for local Afghanis, performed at the event Sound Central. How hard logistically was it to organise an event like this with security concerns and resistance from conservative groups?
As Rolling Stone coined it when they interviewed us for the festival, they gave the phrase a stealth fest. And I guess it's quite fitting because the fact is that with all the challenges and obstacles in our way, we really had to promote this thing underground. And I mean like severely underground. Most of our promotion was done via SMS. And so what we would do is we would put the buzz out there before the festival saying, it's coming. There's bands playing, and we just try and hype it up. We would not give out the date and the time and the location until the actual day of the festival. So imagine trying to get 500 or 1,000 people to a concert and they don't know where they're going. But on the day, we had a network of SMS subscribers that we would send out messages to, and then they would obviously share it with the rest of their community. And we would get turnout at these festivals, and it was effective because it would mean that the opponents to what we were doing, which is the Taliban, they would not be able to plan and then therefore disrupt the event because they could only find out on the day, and obviously we had security in place to try and make the venue as safe as possible.
With the drawdown of troops that's happened over the last few years and also the 2014 suicide bombing of the French Cultural Centre, how much harder has it been for metal musicians to perform in Kabul or Afghanistan in general?
Basically impossible. Once the IFA, the French Cultural Centre, got attacked, no one was willing to take the risk anymore. That was our main centre for bigger concerts, plus we had smaller venues, but that kind of set the stage from everything up till today. And unfortunately, whether you be a promoter or an art institution or a diplomatic office that wants to sponsor these events, no one wants to take that risk anymore because no one wants to have blood on their hands. And unfortunately, there hasn't been any significant events of any matter in these styles of music since 2014. And unfortunately, that correlates with the withdrawal of troops. As the troops withdrew, the violence centered into the areas where the troops weren't. And obviously, money dried up, so people get more desperate. So the whole state of affairs has really turned on its head. And now it's virtually impossible to put an event on. And this young Afghan that I mentioned is now trying to do that. His biggest challenge is finding a venue to actually do his concert.